Hi, welcome back to the Untitled Adam Savage Project.
Still untitled,
but not entitled.
No, never untitled. My hunch is it'll be untitled for probably three or four more episodes.
Okay.
If I had to guess from here. Today we're going to talk about getting started making.
Yes.
So Norm's here, Adam's here, of course, obviously.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
One of the big questions that we get, and I'm sure you get as well, is I have an idea of a project, or maybe I don't even have an idea of a project, but I want to make something.
Yeah.
I have the urge to make, but I don't know where to start. So what if you are somebody who doesn't know how to machine metal or fiberglass, you do vacuum forming or that kind of stuff, and maybe doesn't have a lot of money.
Right.
I know you talked about building stuff out of cardboard when you were a youth.
So yeah, I have to break down the question into a couple of pieces in order to answer it, because this year at Maker Faire, during my Q&A phase of my talk, I think two different kids, both under the age of 12, asked me, what can I do to get materials to build with at this age when I don't have any money? Which I think is a fantastic question. And in fact, it's almost more important that they're asking the question than any other single thing that's going on. I am a huge proponent of corrugated cardboard as a foundationally fantastic material. It is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It is easy to cut, easy to manipulate. All you need is a mat knife and a cutting mat. It's easy to train a kid safe ways to work with cardboard. You can, you know, it has a lateral stability along the cells, so you can use it in some pretty impressive structural ways. And it glues beautifully with Elmer's glue.
Yeah. Or and you can use tape too. You can use masking tape, duct tape, whatever.
You can use contact cement. You can use any kind of household silicone and whatever you've got. I prefer Elmer's glue because it is a paper product, and Elmer's just grabs that like nobody's business. And corrugated cardboard was my first building material. I found refrigerator boxes in my hometown, and I turned them into spaceships. I turned them into men that sat on my front porch. But to me, so I think corrugated cardboard is a fantastic. Oh, this is the other reason corrugated cardboard is important. Because I learned to build things. I started with corrugated cardboard, but very quickly graduated to, and I think I have some of the books here. I'll pull one. No, maybe I don't. There was a series done in the 80s by an architect named Alan Rose. And the series of books was called The World at Your Feet. And each one was a magazine format book of about 30 pages, heavy paper, where you could cut things out of the paper. It wasn't pre-scored or anything. And you could build your own Taj Mahal, Capitol Building, Empire State Building, Sears Tower, Brooklyn Bridge. And all of these world landmarks were encompassed by this series. And I built all of them. One by one, I slowly built them all. And the thing about building models from paper is that you're effectively solving a problem of how to make compound curves with a material that only bends in a simple curve.
Okay.
And that process of problem solving curves by using planar forms is what I call them. And a planar form is a piece of paper, or it's a piece of wood, or it's a piece of metal. In fact, this is the epiphany, is that carpentry and sewing and metalworking and corrugated cardboard building, paperwork, they're all the same thing. They're all effectively the same process.
3D objects out of 2D things?
Exactly. So each of these things, a piece of wood, is effectively a 2D object. You make it 3D by adding dimension. There are very few materials that you actually sculpt all the way out of, like a block of marble. Most of our building is additive construction.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can build something out of cardboard or paper, it's not a big leap to then learn how to sew a dress. You just have to understand that each material has the rules by which you join things at the seams and you create a structure. And once you understand the foundational work, which is the planar forms joining at different angles, then the rules become much easier to learn because you already understand how they all should go together.
So in sewing, it's stitches. In carpentry, it's figuring out how to do corner joins at different angles.
Exactly.
And in machining, it's all sorts of other stuff.
Or in machining and then welding. Yeah, machining, you might use tapped screws to join things, with welding, with metalwork, all of these processes that I learned, they're all the same thing. And so I love the fact that sewing's in there. It took me a long time before I realized that I was good at sewing, because it's effectively the same thing as carpentry.
It makes a ton of sense when you say it that way, yeah. So you're a kid and you're starting out, you go get a bunch of corrugated cardboard, I know that there's a bunch of tools that teach you how to do paper folding, that the kind of computerized aids that help you do that stuff, like the Pepacura stuff and some of that. Like what do you think the next step is?
Well, you know, it's a great time to be jumping into a pool like that, because right now on the web, it's a very deep pool. We have websites like Instructables, which are fantastic at giving step by step, often to me, slightly under ambitious projects. Like sometimes I see an Instructable and I'm like, oh, I'd love to see two versions of this, the A level. And then once you've done that and you want to do it again, the B level, that's
crazy deep. Yeah.
And Pepacura is really interesting to me because it is sort of like we've all been promised for years now. Like, there are technologies that are overpromised. The video phone for one. Right? The video phone was in like the 1938 World's Fair.
Yeah.
It's in those AT&T commercials.
Right. Yeah. It's been a long time coming. And in computers, we've all been taught, oh, eventually computers are just going to give us everything we want. Well, they'll be replicators. You know, we'll be like Earl Grey tea, hot, you know. and Pepacura is sort of along that trajectory of anything I see, I can eventually have in front of me.
Yeah.
And Pepacura is like the longest way around there is to making a form, but it is a great sort of, because it's very labor intensive, but it allows someone with very little skill to almost immediately be making something super complex, like Halo armor.
So let's explain what that is. Pepacura is free software that you can import 3D models in, and 3D models you can design, you can download 3D models.
Can you pull them from games and stuff like that?
You can import them. We actually have a guide on the site on how do you pull them in from like a Half-Life game, and Google SketchUp is free software.
Yeah.
So Google SketchUp's super easy to use and imports perfectly to Pepacura, and it basically outputs sheets of paper designs that you can make paper craft out of.
But more than that, it gives you not only cutting guides, but wherever you're supposed to glue something to something else, it is numbered and lettered so that it is, as long as you're using your brain in a moderate way, you don't really have to understand how what you're putting together goes, as long as you're following the
It's like building Lego by the instructions.
Yes.
Okay. But also it allows you to modify your design. So when you do want to understand, you know, the best place for joints, you can basically, it works on your spatial skills, turning a 2D design into something 3D. You realize, oh, maybe Pepacura didn't figure out the best way for me to piece this, you know, triangle together, and then you can just redo the joints.
Now, I mean, at a certain point, I think Pepacura is going to give way to printers that do their own die cutting. That's absolutely going to happen. You know, you can already buy a vinyl knife cutting machine.
Yeah.
They're a couple $1,000s, but that price point will probably go down. People will be just printing out, cut out pieces of paper.
Or a laser cutter. I mean, a laser cutter is $7,000 now.
The same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And even that is going to get simpler and simpler and simpler. I know that Autodesk is working on software that helps convert things from 3D to 2D so that you can build it yourself in lots of different ways.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of ways to skin the cat. I am a big proponent of making things out of paper and making things out of cardboard, specifically because it teaches your brain how to make that leap from 2D to 3D, which is one of the hardest things to do.
And the price of failure with cardboard is relatively low, depending on what project you're working
on. And the rewards for imagination are very high, especially for a kid. You know, the cardboard isn't the same as getting, you know, a full vinyl model from the hobby shop. It allows the kid to imagine more out of that cardboard.
Absolutely.
Well, but and then there are other things you can move on to once you've kind of established that. You can learn how to do vacuum forming, and you can
I have seen a beautiful tutorial in the least expensive method of vacuum forming I've ever seen in my life. It's a British guy who basically took a trash can, lined it in tin foil, and he puts a space heater at the bottom. Itself, not quite the safest thing to do.
It seems kind of dangerous, yeah.
But the thing is with the type of space heater he uses, it's effectively one of those bulbs with the windings around it.
Oh, okay.
So it's not a lot of parts to screw up with. But he makes basically a garbage can that's quite hot, and he takes his plastic, stretched in a frame. It's the only part that's complicated to build is the frame that holds the plastic, and sits it on top of the garbage can. And then he puts it on top of the form with a standard household vacuum cleaner and gets beautiful vacuum forms.
That's
even
amazing.
Out of things as difficult to form as ABS plastic. vacuum form is maybe even too far of a leap. I think that there's there's simpler things like paper mache. It was one of the early ways I jumped into making more complicated forms. Mm-hmm. Paper mache covered with gesso and then covered with acrylic yields incredible things. Legos is almost like the ultimate entry level because it's absolutely a 2D module.
When you're moving from Lego, I think there's a big cognitive jump though from going out and buying an X-Wing kit from Lego to buying a whole bunch of blocks and figuring out how to make something on your own. Yeah. I think Lego can be, because it's kind of, because for lack of a better word, the pixels are big, right?
The pixels are big and the reward is high. Again, that's true. You were saying the reward needs to be high.
Yeah.
I think that one of the other places where the cost of entry is incredibly low is electronics.
That's true.
Actually, people don't realize how cheap resistors and LEDs actually are.
But even if you want to go up a level to robotics stuff, mm-hmm. the cost of entry, like I've been, after going to Maker Faire, we talked to a ton of people at Maker Faire who sell, it's almost to a point where the robotic stuff is like Lego, right? Yeah. Where you can buy, if you want an articulated joint that does a specific thing, rather than have to go out and machine the gears and figure out how to make it work, you can just buy the joint and it's going to be more expensive than paper mache, but it's not, for under $800, you can build an amazing robot now.
All right. So now I'm going to circle back to the other way I want to break apart the problem of how you get started making. And it is, to me, you have to come up with something you want. Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing. The idea to like get started with cardboard. Okay, let's choose a project with cardboard. What should we build? That's not the way to go.
Right.
To me, the way to go is, what do you want? Millennium Falcon? Let's build it. Yeah. How do you build it? Well, there's people who have tutorials all over the web. What do you want to build it out of? You can build it out of anything you want. I personally have actually around here a papercraft model of the Millennium Falcon, which I blew up to like 4 feet. And I've never made it, but it's sitting somewhere in this shop rolled up on heavy paper for me to just jump into one day.
That's the idea of building things, built that you can't not build.
Yes, absolutely. So when you come up with a project and you want to build, and then you try it out of cardboard, and if you hate the result, you have pushed yourself in a specific direction. So I'm a big proponent of the idea of moving. We are all often so hamstrung by the, well, I can't start this until that. I can't do this until that. And I don't know how to do that. So I can't do this. I was once confronted by, I had finished this very elaborate sculpture and I had no idea what color it should be. And I came up with this idea that I should paint it the opposite of anything I imagine would be appropriate. So I took this beat up, exhausted robot arm that looked like it would have been unearthed out of some place on AI. And I built this in 1991. And I painted it with red and white candy stripes. It took me 6 hours just to mask it, but I painted it with red and white candy stripes. And when it was done, I was like, I hate this, it's terrible. But now I know what color it needs to be.
Yeah.
So the thing that I take from that, and I've actually applied this to relationships and to job searches and everything, is movement is more important than anything else. Push yourself in some direction. So come up with a project and try it. Yeah. And if it doesn't work out of the material you're working in, try another one.
Do something even if it's wrong.
I mean, we had someone on our forums post, right? They wanted to build Thor's hammer. And a lot of people, when they have an idea fully formed, right? Yeah. They want to build a certain object. They want to get to the perfect form of that object in one try. And that, I think, is a big mental hiccup for people because they don't realize you can do the cardboard. You can be happy with intermediate steps.
Well, you also have to get to know the thing. Also really have to get to know the thing.
And at the end, over time, you will.
Right.
And you'll have this whole story along the way.
You know, it's telling that, people should know at a place like Industrial Light and Magic, where we're about to build a set, we always build a preliminary set. So, for Terminator 3, I built a particle accelerator set that's behind the window as the Terminator and Claire Danes are running past this window. I built a set behind that window. Now, the set I eventually built with my team was about 8 feet wide and 8 feet deep and 4 feet tall. It was huge. But my friend Fon Davis and I built a mock-up of it that was about 2 feet by 2 feet by 1 foot in a day and a half.
So you made a diorama.
We made a diorama, but it gave us It gave us a super detailed clarity about what the shape of this thing was. And okay. You always, in order to build anything with real skill, you have to have it fully in your head. And you have to train yourself how to put those models in your head. So we had the model, but also allowed us to talk about things. Like, oh, I'm going to build this part here instead of that curvy bit that's behind the straight bit with the thing on the drawing. You know, I labeled it red. You don't know what I'm talking about? You need a point of departure. So if you're, the Thor hammer is a great example of like, well, it's etched, but how deep and how big are the graphics? Well, I don't know until I see it. You need to actually build
a mock-up.
What's
the wrapping on the handle?
Yes,
what's
exactly.
The yeah?
And going back step before you do the model, then you do the drawing. So even if you're not ready to cut the cardboard yet, draw.
I actually draw often. I'm not very good at drawing, but I draw as a mode of putting something into my head. I'm like, you know what? I've got 6 hours on the plane here. I'm just going to sit and draw all five of these pieces. I don't know what shape they are, but I'll get close. And then I'll sometimes I will actually machine interim pieces of things just to get the shape in my head. And I know it's going to be wrong, but I need to know how wrong.
So that goes against one of those cardinal rules. Like, you should know exactly how many thousandths of an inch you're going to carve away on everything when you're doing that machining stuff.
Well, but if you're extending the output on a diesel engine,
right,
you absolutely need to know exactly how many thousandths of an inch or 10 thousandths of an inch tolerance you're actually making something to. But when you're making aesthetic things that are things you want to have around, you have to bridge. Sometimes they're going to have mechanical components, and then those you will need to play around. But again, even with mechanical components, you have to mock things up in cardboard to make sure the arm thing that you want to make, even drawing it in 3D, is actually not necessarily going to give you the clarity that you need.
So then the last thing we should talk about maybe is where to get stuff. Because this is a hard thing, especially, I mean, we're lucky enough to live in San Francisco where we have access to everything from, you know, custom cut and shaped plastic all the way down to like machine screws in crazy sizes you can't get normal places. And things like nichrome wire, you can just go to the corner store and pick up and you need to make an impromptu heating element.
Yeah, not many people know they sell nichrome wire in all the bodegas in San Francisco.
Yeah, it's amazing. Norm and I went on a hunt for nichrome wire one day that ended spectacularly badly, the internet is a good resource for this. Wired had a good story a few weeks ago. I think we linked to it. We should go through and dig a little deeper, because I think there were some places on there where they listed 10 stores that sell everything from like supplies for molecular gastronomy at home all the way up to crazy machine screws and vacuum forming supplies.
Oh,
and
right.
Resin
I read
like that
article. It was wonderful.
But I mean, where do you find, like, if you're not, I mean, I know you spent some time dumpster diving in
your youth. Dumpster diving is it. Dumpster diving is everything. I mean, dumpster diving in industrial parks is terrific. Police don't like it when you do it late at night. I would recommend to make to make your life easier, Sunday afternoons is a great time to drive through the back parking lots of industrial buildings and look through their dumpsters.
Stay away from biomedical.
Garbage days, you know, almost all neighborhoods have, you know, people put out their garbage every week, but once or twice a year, they allow you to put whatever you've got on the curb and they'll come get all of it. Those are fantastic days to come get.
And you can find out what days they are on the website, on the garbage company's website.
Not only on the website, but in fact, now with the web, there's whole communities of people who trade the dates of garbage days all over the country. Because, I mean, the number of things I have found on garbage days, and I'm not exaggerating at all, working televisions, they're always
there. Oh, yeah.
I found a Makita
shelves.
Drill with a battery and a charger. That someone had thrown out because the forward reverse switch was stuck in the middle and they never figured it out.
Oh, wow. So you just take it apart.
They threw it away.
Oh, that's crazy.
So, you know, that sort of stuff. The other thing to recognize is that, and there's a model making book in my head. I will write it one day, I promise. But one of the things that I have is a whole chapter on the cheap way to do something. You want to cast a material. Well, there's nothing cheaper than plaster of Paris, and every hardware store in the country has it.
Yeah.
You want to cast in a high tensile strength rubber. Well, hot glue, actually, in a plaster mold works beautifully for making props. It's a little hard to paint, I grant you that. But again, you can actually experiment with some fairly complicated things with some really inexpensive and easy to find materials like that.
Interesting.
Yeah, so there are
Hardware stores.
Hardware stores are phenomenal sources. My parents understood my penchant for making things. And if parents, if you have a kid who is interested in making, my parents gave me the charge account, the ability to use the charge account at the hardware store in my hometown. And there are a few things they did for me that were more important in terms of making me feel autonomous. So then when I wanted to make juggling rings and I found a book that told you a cheap way to do it out of plastic hose, I just went down to the hardware store and bought a bunch of plastic hose and tape. And, you know, they never begrudged me those expenses. I never abused it. Amazingly, I'm shocked that I never set anything on fire and then I never abused the
diesel
and
fertilizer.
Right. But it's the encouragement that my parents gave me that I do with my kids too. They're interested in music, I get them instruments. They're interested in making, I get them the materials they need. I have one kid who bought an Arduino kit at the Maker Faire, and he's got a full Weller soldering station on order.
Awesome.
Now, I mean, I bought him a nice one, but that's just because I want him to have a nice one. Look, a soldering iron that costs $8 is 95% as functional as one that costs $200.
Yeah, especially if you're just doing rough, like if you're doing rough solders, the cheap one is better because it heats up faster a lot of times.
I've been to my friends at Apple don't use soldering irons that look any more advanced than you know the ones that I've got in my drawers over here.
That's one of my favorite things. Like being in the tech industry, we go and see the kind of back room labs all the time, and it's always it's rooms that look like my garage.
Yeah.
There's just pegboards with all the tools lined up.
Yeah.
And then maybe they have a cool storage system, but it's you don't need anything.
You don't need Tony Stark's lab.
No. Also, actually, I will also say this. Flea markets are fantastic for entry-level tool purchasing. They got a lot of these crappy tools from China, which will not last for many iterations. However, if you're a 15-year-old kid and you need a crowbar or you need a cordless tool, you can go to a flea market and pick one up for like $12. And that is a fantastic, again, another entry level. Then you learn what you need, you know, learn what you need to know. We'd all like to have the best versions of every tool. But, you know, over the years, one of the things I did long before I had success with Mythbusters or even in special effects was I would slowly, every couple times a year, invest in another good tool. And I still have all those tools.
So you're building a collection. I mean, the thing is, once you're in a place where you're buying stuff that's the best, then it lasts you for the rest of your life. And probably if you take care of it through your kid's life and their kid's life,
it does.
Or, and it's, you know, ends up in a flea market someplace one day.
And it's no different than the musical instrument. You know, it's my saxophone teacher, I used to play the saxophone, told me, whenever you find a mouthpiece that's better than the one you're using, buy it immediately. There's it's all about the mouthpiece. And the moment you find one that feels more comfortable than yours, buy it, borrow whatever you have to do to get that mouthpiece. It's worth it. And so, I mean, some mouthpieces can cost $300.
Wow.
But he was a proponent of like, when you find, everyone is different and every human is different. There's a bazillion of them out there. And he was advocating the same kind of investment.
It sounds good. Well, I guess that'll do it for us on this episode of the as yet untitled Adam Savage Project. For Adam and Norm, we'll see you guys next week.
See you next week.
Bye.